Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at Grunes.co.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Happy Sunday. I'm Blaise Olson in here doing Sunday Take. And if you hadn't heard, we're in a temporary studio here. And it's different. And different isn't always bad. People just need to just kind of vibe with it. But that might have been why the delay was there, because I couldn't hear myself talk for a second, Josh. And, you know, there's one thing radio people like to do. It's hear themselves talk.
It's true.
We're going to dig in this week to kind of what's going on with the Democratic Party. There's something going on, and our governor, Tim Walz, is a big part of what is going on. His choice to do these town hall meetings in districts where Republicans have not done town hall meetings has become a national story, and it also affects us locally. But if you look at the Bernie Sanders tour, the event in Denver, 30,000 people. And one of the things that struck me, and I'm kind of processing through this, as is my style, what's going on? And looking at the multiple dimensions of kind of the resistance of the Democratic Party right now, do they have a plan? Is this spontaneous? Where was this energy during the campaign is probably the biggest question, because if they can pull 30,000 people for Bernie Sanders and AOC in Denver, why couldn't they pull 30,000 people for Vice President Harris and Tim Walz during the campaign, a campaign that lacked energy? Why is there suddenly energy? And is that energy about being against Trump, or is it about something that they stand for? We'll kind of break those things down this week. But, you know, the other thing important to address here at the beginning of the show is the news that, you know, distracted us a little this week. The arrest and charges against State Senator Justin Eichhorn. This has come up a couple times socially in the last few days, naturally, amongst my non-work political and media friends. And I just want to put it in perspective because, you know, we've had kind of a complicated start to the legislative session and seats unfilled and legislators not showing up for work and a tie until there was a special election in the Senate. And while this, the arrest and resignation of Senator Eichhorn does not change the balance of power in the Senate, it does show that we cannot just have nice, smooth working legislatures in Minnesota. And I want to give you the timeline. So David Godfrey, the new House member who filled the seat the Democrats had an ineligible candidate in, was sworn in Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon. St. Patrick's Day, Monday. We finally have all 201 legislators. The House can co-govern and have their co-chairs. The Senate can kind of keep kind of treading along. And I was over there on Monday, actually in the Senate office building, as the details emerged. And you could just see the faces on people, just shocked, saddened, but shocked. And in a little kind of dark humor sort of way, of course, we can't have a nice, smooth-running legislature without scandal in Minnesota, because it was almost a year ago that Senator Nicole Mitchell was arrested for that burglary. That was Easter weekend, which would be next weekend by the calendar. And so David Godfrey, the new House member, was sworn in at 3:30. And Senator Justin Eichhorn was arrested at 5:45. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we made it 2 hours and 15 minutes with a full legislature before somebody was arrested. And, well, that's a distraction, and it obviously was the political buzz of the week. I just want us to kind of step back and look at it in those terms and really understand, well, elected officials are human. In Minnesota, we have serious challenges getting people to serve that are of the quality that people would expect from their elected officials. That's probably a national story as well, but we'll save that for another day. But this week, as I said, we're going to dig into this national movement. My guest is going to be John McCormick from The Wall Street Journal. He's a Minnesota native from Roseville. He's written for the Chicago Tribune. He's written for the Des Moines Register. He's written for Bloomberg. He's now at the Wall Street Journal. He covers Midwest politics for them. And the roots of much of this is in the Midwest right now. And we're going to get our first peek at that in Wisconsin on Tuesday, where they have statewide elections on the ballot, including a highly watched state Supreme Court race and state superintendent of public education race. Yes, they elect their education commissioner in Wisconsin. They also have a ballot question about voter ID. So we'll get a glimpse of that. John's been in Wisconsin. He was in Minnesota this week as well. And I want to get what his sense of kind of the vibe is and the energy is on the ground in these populist rallies on both sides, but specifically what he sees as the Democratic dynamics. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm your host, Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take Radio. And as I mentioned in the opening segment, I'm trying to figure out what the dynamic in this populist uprising amongst Democrats is right now. And we've seen a rally in Denver with 30,000 people. We've seen these town halls from Governor Walz that are packed. We saw Attorney General Keith Ellison host some other attorneys general in Minnesota this week to a full house. We have some elections in Wisconsin this week. And so I wanted to break it down with somebody who I've trusted and known for nearly 30 years. I like to say that because it reminds him how old we are. But he's a youthful guy who just got off the treadmill. So John McCormick from The Wall Street Journal joins us. John's a Minnesota native and has followed national politics from the Midwest for several decades. John, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thank you. Good morning. And yes, hopefully the gym noise will cooperate here for this call. We'll see.
Well, I think one time we did this while I was in a hockey arena in New Hampshire. So I think we have a history of making it work. You've been out and about. You've been in Wisconsin. You've been in Minnesota. There's a lot of energy. And what I'm trying to figure out is it pro-Democratic energy? Is it anti-Trump energy? Is it pro-Trump energy on the Republican side? And what are the issues that everyday kind of rally goers or folks are talking about that's getting them fired up?
Boy, you don't ask easy questions on a Sunday morning, do you? I think there's a lot going on there. I mean, let me break it down just a little bit. Yeah, so I was at the hearing that Attorney General Ellison and I guess there were five other AGs from around the country with him in North St. Paul on Thursday night. they had, you know, more than 1,000 people there, big crowd for a weeknight at a high school in North St. Paul. And yeah, it was basically a ton of energy there. People very frustrated with what's going on with DOGE. A lot of testimony about, you know, Veterans Administration employees losing their jobs. But the Democratic Party is at this, you know, very challenging spot, out of power, very frustrated, trying to figure out how they can, you know, most effectively combat Trump. And that's not an easy thing to do when you don't have power. And so the party is sort of fracturing. I mean, there's complaints about, you know, leadership in Congress. Sanders is attracting these huge crowds on his tour, you know, anti-oligarchy tour that he's holding. And you know, he's always, you know, been a real strong appeal to the populist base of the party. But the party needs to sort of decide, is it going to go further left, perhaps, or is it going to maybe moderate its message a little bit more? You know, I personally think it's going to be challenging for the party to be politically successful, appeal to independent voters if it does go further left. But all of that is going to get sorted out. You know, we've got this big Supreme Court election in Wisconsin that, you know, we can talk about a little bit, too, that really has become nationalized and is just seeing an ocean of money poured into it.
John, I think you bring up the crux of the question there, which is which way does the Democratic Party go? And, you know, in Minnesota, we're exceptional. And when we talk about these issues, we want the local angle. And I've had a couple conversations with Ken Martin, but not on the radio and not digging in. He's obviously one big piece of this puzzle. One of the interesting pieces in Wisconsin is that their party chair was Martin's main opponent. And this may seem like one of those moments that if they're successful in Wisconsin, they're going to believe that they have a formula, kind of like midterm elections in Virginia or New Jersey. What do people on the ground in Wisconsin, are they just fired up against kind of against Trump, or is there more to, you know, the Supreme Court race or the superintendent's race or even the ballot questions?
Yeah, I mean, both sides are really fired up in Wisconsin, as they always are. I mean, this is the quintessential battleground state in the country. It had the narrowest margin of any state in America in November. And so, yeah, Ben Wickler is the chairman of the state party there, the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, has been a very successful party chair, very good at raising funds nationally. And sort of making sure that these local races do get nationalized so that national donors pour a lot of money into them. What's happening on the Republican side is very unprecedented, though. You've got Elon Musk, who held essentially a conference call yesterday afternoon promoting the conservative Supreme Court justice candidate in the race, and he has poured, you know, at least $10 million into this race. He's by far the biggest donor, much bigger than George Soros or any of the Democratic donors so far that we know of. And so we have this Wisconsin race that's really capturing sort of everything that's going on in the national party for both sides. And the Democratic-backed candidate in the Supreme Court race is a progressive. She's a lawyer who had represented Planned Parenthood. She's represented union groups in the past. She's fought against the, you know, famous Act 10 law in Wisconsin. And so, you know, she's to the left of center. And the Republican-backed candidate in the race is very much a Trump Republican and very conservative. And so you have two candidates sort of at the extremes of their party. And how this will all sort out in Wisconsin is going to be fascinating to watch. Either side, if one side picks, you know, happens to win, they're going to claim, you know, oh, we've got the secret sauce. We're going to, you know, this is a very good sign for us going forward towards the midterms, which are, you know, only 19 months away at this point. But, you know, that's an eternity in national politics.
My guest is John McCormick. He's a reporter with The Wall Street Journal. We're talking about kind of what's at stake Tuesday in Wisconsin, where Democrats are. I know you're in North St. Paul. Where in Wisconsin have you been? And one of the things you think about North St. Paul, you having grown up in Roseville, me in Shoreview, is that it was a blue-collar suburb, and that is where Trump has made inroads. So the idea that that's the choice in the place where Attorney General Ellison chose to have folks, what I'm wondering is, what are the communities in Wisconsin that went for Trump, you know, those regional centers, what do those feel like right now? And, you know, is it issues or is it personalities?
It is both. It is issues and personalities. I mean, the Wisconsin race is going to be very much, you know, a turnout election, as all close elections are. And for the Democratic-backed candidate, that's going to mean needing huge turnout in the Madison area and in the Milwaukee area, you know, the two biggest population centers in the yep. state. And Brad Schimmel, the Republican-backed candidate, is really trying to work that rural vote, just like Trump did. And that's where Elon Musk's super PAC is spending a lot of money to try to turn out the base, to try to very much connect Schimmel with Trump. And they're making the case that if you want to see, you know, Trump's agenda move forward, you need to get behind Brad Schimmel, because otherwise Trump won't be able to, you know, get his agenda forward. Musk on this call yesterday, you know, went as far as saying, you know, there's two congressional seats in Wisconsin that the Supreme Court there may look at, you know, the boundaries at some point and could make them more Democratic leaning. And that could affect control of the U.S. House. So, you know, Musk made the point that this is just a huge election with huge stakes. And he's right. And it's going to be, you know, real important for both sides to get their base voters out. I mean, we may see I don't think it'll get there, but I mean, we may see approaching sort of general election turnout levels in Wisconsin, which is, you know, pretty surprising for a spring election held on April 1st, which, as Musk pointed out yesterday, just happens to be April Fool's Day that they're going to have this huge election.
No, absolutely. So we're a week plus away from that. One of the things you said that I think is interesting is get behind Trump's agenda in rural parts of Wisconsin. One of the questions I get, one of the daily conversations I'm having, especially as we talk to folks in the agriculture community, is how is Trump's agenda going to impact those who voted for him in rural areas, especially farmers and people tied to the ag economy? Any sense from you of how they're feeling? Have you done any kind of stop by the cafe and talk to the common man?
Yeah, I mean, there's nervousness about the tariffs. You know, the ag sector is always very nervous about tariffs and trade. And so there is caution, you know, and worry there. Now, the USDA is just coming up with a, you know, big bunch of money to push out into rural America to try to appease the rural vote a little bit. And that'll probably go a long way. So I think, you know, rural voters are still very much with Trump. Now, if we get into a full-scale trade war and, you know, that they're having trouble selling their products outside of the U.S., that could become problematic. But we're not there yet. I mean, corn and soybeans are still moving around and pork and all that. So I don't think we're quite there yet. But there's anxiety, there's nervousness. But they, you know, that rural vote is just so solidly behind Trump, and it's not so much for economic issues as sort of cultural and social issues. They, you know, ironically, they feel like this Manhattan billionaire is, you know, like them, even though he doesn't have a whole lot in common with most rural voters.
I think we've all seen that now for several years, where what does he have in common? But he does appeal, and he finds these threads of issues, whether cultural or social. And even, you know, the idea that, you know, ag and farmers are, you know, dependent, they're intertwined with the federal government. They rely on government as much as anyone in the country. And yet, you know, DOGE and some of those factors are going to impact delivery of those services, those funds, as we go forward. And what I'm trying to figure out is, you've watched this for a long time, and I'll take the Department of Education and then we'll take a break and we'll come back. But Department of Education, for years, Republicans have said, we're going to eliminate it. And now Trump is trying to eliminate it. And Democrats are like, well, you can't do that. And what I don't know is where normal people are on it, right? We talk about it, we watch it, we read it, but where are normal people on that particular issue or some of these other DOGE questions? And I think, you know, the Wisconsin election and some of these town halls show that Democrats may not have been as energized in November, but now that some of this stuff is reality, they suddenly have the energy. And that's the piece that it's kind of that trigger that maybe Democrats needed to have energy, but can they pivot that? Any sense on DOGE issues or things like that as you've been out and about?
Yeah, I mean, DOGE is not popular, I think, with a lot of voters. I mean, there's real uncertainty about it. Not that most people don't think that the federal government could be slimmed down, and if you did it in sort of a cautious, you know, scalpel-like way. So, you know, the Trump base is still solidly behind, you know, Musk and Trump and DOGE. But that's probably, you know, 38% to 42% of voters. I think among the rest of the voters, there's a lot of anxiety about DOGE and whether it's going too far and whether it's, you know, eliminating, you know, critical workers that we actually do need to perform services. And so I think, you know, as if wait times at the Veterans Administration, you know, jump, if, you know, if there are issues with transportation safety, if some bad accident happens, if there's, you know, something involving the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the employees aren't in the right place, then, you know, there'll be even more anxiety about that. And so that's a risk I think the Trump administration is taking by doing this in such a, sort of a brute force sort of way, rather than a more precise sort of measured, studied way, where they would also get the backing of Congress on specific cuts to be made. If something goes wrong, they're not going to be able to point to Congress as part of the reason that something went wrong.
We're going to take a break. My guest is John McCormick from the Wall Street Journal. When we come back, what does John think when he looks at the national landscape where Tim Walz fits into the equation? He's covered him. He's watched him from a different perspective than just right here in Minnesota. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. Give us what you're thinking today, 651-461-9226. Text where you think Minnesota falls. Is this an anti-Trump movement? Is it actually a flip for the Democrats to have a vision that America is energized by? My guest is John McCormick. He's from the Wall Street Journal. John, I want to pull out from just Minnesota. I want to look at the country. You've covered presidential races. You're based in Chicago. Rahm Emanuel's name is you know, coming up to possibly be a candidate for president. Gavin Newsom, obviously. And then Tim Walz, who you've gotten to know more as you covered him on the national scene. Where do you see, you know, the national Democrats as they look 3 years out to the presidential race? Obviously, they have the midterm, but they're really trying to figure out who their standard bearer is in a few years. And there don't seem to be very many new names or new ideas. And with Sanders, even in his aging state, drawing 30,000 people to downtown Denver, you don't wonder if they still don't have a youthful voice or a youthful figure that could flip the generational piece of this.
Well, I'll throw out one other name to the several that you mentioned. I mean, there's Pete Buttigieg, who was contemplating running for Senate in Michigan, but decided not to do that. You know, that sort of made people think, maybe he's thinking about something else. And, you know, was a presidential candidate previously before he was transportation secretary. So he would be a little bit of a generational change. But, yeah, there are a ton of people who, you know, potentially could be in the mix for 2028. And I think they're all trying to sort of establish themselves as part of the conversation. And I think that's what Walz is doing. You know, he went really dark after the election. You know, I was banging on the door trying to get an interview in November and December, you know, politely told no. In recent weeks, though, he has kind of emerged back on the national stage. He's doing these town halls in places where Republican House members are not holding town halls. So that happened to take him to Iowa. It happened to take him to Wisconsin last week in the Eau Claire area. And so he's trying to establish himself as part of the conversation for where the Democratic Party goes. Would he be, you know, a natural front runner for 2028? Probably not. I mean, he would, you know, be in the consideration, I think. But, you know, he had some stumbles as he emerged on the national stage for the first time, kind of a, you know, didn't have a absolutely stellar debate performance. had a history of sort of making some exaggerations that then proved to be problematic when they were fact checked or countered by Republicans. And so, he's going to have to figure out whether he wants to run for the presidency, or is he, just looking to be a prominent voice in the party. He'd be somebody who certainly could be considered for a cabinet position or something like that in a future Democratic administration. So, we'll obviously be keeping an eye on him on the national stage, but there's going to be a lot of other people. Gavin Newsom in California has been, really interesting in recent weeks. Here's a, somebody who's considered pretty left on the national spectrum, all of a sudden sort of pivoting more to the center on some key issues and sort of what he's doing with his podcast and who he's inviting to have conversations with. So this will all be in the mix, through the midterms, and then 2028 race, really on both sides, will start immediately thereafter. So we're probably 20 months out from the next presidential race getting, very, very serious.
I want to just, Rahm Emanuel's name's come up. You're obviously based in Chicago. He's a yep. force of nature there. Is he serious about running, or is he just filling a void right now?
I think he's trying to, pull the party to the center a bit, for sure, which is sort of what he has long made a practice of doing. I mean, he is very much more of a centrist yes. Democrat and a pragmatist. He thinks the party has gone too far left to be politically successful on the national stage. And so, whether he's really contemplating it, I wouldn't put it past him. Rahm is a very, very confident individual and, has been a White House chief of staff. He knows everything that's involved with the job and, is a very, very savvy political strategist. So I would never say no about Rahm. I don't know that, there's anything really actively taking place right now. But he's again, like Walls and others, trying to be part of the conversation. And, Rahm isn't hurting for money. He had a very successful investment banking career before he got into politics. But he's also doing some things to generate some income, CNN gig and a column in the Washington Post. So those are both ways for him to, keep his voice out there and also make a few bucks.
Last question. You're really well tied into the Obama team, and you think about what Obama meant for Democrats in 2008. He brought new life to the party. He brought, a vision for the future. What do other Obama alums say about the state of the party? Because, on one hand, they were there when times were good. On the other hand, did they leave the party without kind of a vision for the future after Clinton lost?
Yeah, no, there has been a lot of complaining about that they didn't. They kind of built their own Obama campaign universe, but didn't build the national party as much. And so when he left the stage, the national party and the local state parties weren't as robust as maybe they could have been. And there's probably some legitimacy to that. Obviously, it was a very different political environment pre-Trump. Everything in politics has changed since yep. then. But I think the Obama story is one good to keep in mind as you do think about 2028. I mean, nobody thought he was going to be president of the United States. I was at the Chicago Tribune at the time. I pretty much thought I was covering somebody who was, maybe in the running for the vice presidency, but, would never beat Hillary Clinton. So you just never know on these things how they're going to play out. Timing is everything. There could be some, a governor from Kentucky or some lesser known national figure who emerges and suddenly electrifies the party and becomes the nominee. So it's just a good reminder that, even 6 months is an eternity in politics, and a lot of this stuff can change, and we'll see what happens when we get there.
Sounds good. One little flashback for you regarding the Walls town halls. In a different life 30 years ago, we both would have been in Rochester, Minnesota yesterday, where he had his last town hall. So there you go.
For sure.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Get back to that treadmill.
Thanks. Take care.
See ya. John McCormick from the Wall Street Journal, a close friend of mine, but somebody I trust who, you know, when you've been around this business a long time and you have friends who've kind of expanded their universe and their coverage and their sources, John is that person. And obviously writing the Wall Street Journal has a lens on these things. So when we come back, this week's take, is there a strategy? My take when we come back on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. This week's take is coming up in a minute, but first, another message from Minnesota's hospitals. You know, look, did you know that Medicaid supports everyone in Minnesota, all of us? It's the largest source of federal health funding in Minnesota hospitals, and it helps and is critical in hospitals keeping their doors open. The program faces unprecedented pressure and threats of cuts from the federal government that would make Minnesota hospitals vulnerable to closures and it'd devastate our entire healthcare system in the state. It's going to shift massive costs if the feds cut Medicaid to state taxpayers, and we must protect Medicaid and the promises of it. Regardless of your age, your income, or your health status, Medicaid helps all Minnesotans access healthcare in Minnesota. So Minnesota hospitals want you to visit protectmnpatients.org. Again, protectmnpatients.org. Learn why Medicaid is critical for your healthcare access. That's a message from the Minnesota Hospital Association. This week's take is really about the state of the Democratic Party. We have a front row seat in Minnesota. The pawns and rooks and kings and queens on the chessboard of national democratic politics have ties to Minnesota. And they're trying to maneuver in this landscape. From Ken Martin to Tim Walz, there is a major piece of Minnesota that will or will not determine the future of the Democratic Party. And like the Republican Party post-Obama, Democrats seem to be a little rudderless, a little divided, a little lost in what they're supposed to do to push back against Republicans. The violence of Tesla dealerships, the suggested violence that we may see in other places, in rallies, not acceptable. Hard stop. Anyone of any political party who does not call out their own does not deserve to serve. But it's also turning down the temperature. You know, Democrats have asked Republicans to do this. Republicans have asked Democrats to do this. It's actually going to take the idea that people just tune out and cool off of these leaderless situations. But the biggest question I have, and I'll probably write about this week at thedailyagenda.com and in Morning Take, is do Democrats have a strategy or is it still too early? Is it just to be anti-Trump? Is it just to be anti-Musk? And I call out the illustration that is Governor Walz for this because I've heard from Democrats, I've heard from progressives, that they're annoyed that Governor Walz is doing this tour outside of Minnesota. And the things he has said on the tour have had some reverberating impacts on him and on the party. First, we'll take the idea that on the Gavin Newsom podcast, he said, quote, I'm going to kick their ass. That somehow he was going to go toe-to-toe with conservatives or Musk or Republicans in some sort of, you know, puff your chest out football coach sort of way. That's where authenticity plays out. Nobody buys that from Tim Walz. And that seems inauthentic. Which brings together what he said in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which, if authentic, should be a concern for all of us. And that's when he said that he gets a little joy looking at Tesla stock crashing. That he somehow is hoping for failure of a company that employs Americans, regardless of who its leader is. Elon Musk is going to be fine, but if Tesla stock crashes and they don't make any money, they have to go out of business. Those American workers will lose their job. Furthermore, that kind of anti-Musk piece is a little fuel on the anti-Tesla fire that could take somebody who is on the edge or on the verge or a little more radical even than Walls to think that they need to take action and start fires or damage Teslas. A couple weeks ago, I just drove by the Tesla dealership in Golden Valley. There were protesters out there. I totally support their right to protest. But when they cross the line into any sort of violence or damage, it needs to be called out. And when asked about those kind of impacts, Walls just kind of blows it off. No, I would never think that. Well, this is where the strategy and the self-awareness need to come together for Governor Walls. I've been hard on him. I've given him a break since he lost the vice presidential race, and I'll continue to watch to see how he plays out on the national stage and whether or not he runs for a third term in Minnesota. But until there's a vision that's centered around issues and that Democrats find a messenger, it's all just to be against Trump and Doge. And while that may feel good and that may rally people and that may fill auditoriums with activists, it's not probably going to win elections. The 2024 presidential race on both sides lacked a vision for the future of America. I don't expect that soon from anybody. But I would like to see a vision for the future of Minnesota. We have a governor's race next year. And I think that's what Minnesotans are thinking about. So add your issues, add your vision, and find a messenger, a multidimensional strategy that Democrats need to find. They don't need to find it next week or next month, but they'll need to find it in the next 6 to 8 months if they want to be successful in 2026 or in 2028. That's the take this week. I'll be with Vidina Monday through Thursday at 6:20. Corzo's up next. I mean, we don't even have a quarterback to back up JJ yet. That's where we need. I mean, we should probably have a rally on that pretty soon as well.
It's coming.
Okay. Thanks, Josh. You can check out our newsletters, our tip sheets at thedailyagenda.com. And I'll be back next Sunday with another take. Have a great week. Stream something. Watch some sports. Help yourself get away from this divided populace that we have. Enjoy your Sunday morning. I'm looking forward to another.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. I just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at Grunes.co.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Another cup of coffee on the couch right after this. Till next week.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped the video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck. So neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
What the heck is going on with all these promotional popcorn buckets? The giant shorts that all of Gen Z is wearing now? And whatever the heck Hyrox is? I'm comedian and certified hater Matt Bellassai, and these are the types of questions I'm demanding answers to on my podcast, What the Heck with Matt Bellassai. Listen or watch every Thursday as I rant about all the internet trends, pop culture stories, and personal mayhem that makes me scream, What the Heck? Follow What the Heck with Matt Bellassai wherever you get your podcasts.